He remained quiet, letting me think. Speak. We can question each other through the bond if we're around people other than our friends, I said. But for now, for these initial years, I'd like to show the world a united front. That is, if we survive.
We'll survive.
Uncompromising will in those words. That face. But I want you to feel comfortable pushing me, calling me out. When have I ever not done that? He smiled, but I added, I want you to do the same, for me.
Deal. But amongst our family. Call me on my bullshit all you want. I insist, actually.
Why?
Because it's fun.
I nudged him with an elbow.
Because you're my equal, he said. And as much as that means having each other's backs in public, it also means that we grant each other the gift of honesty, of truth.
I surveyed the bustling city around us.
Can I give you a bit of truth, then?
He stilled, but said,
Always.
I blew out a breath. I think you should be careful, working with Kier. Not for how despicable he is, but because I think you could truly wound more if you don't play it right.
Rhys dragged a hand through his hair. I know, I know.
Is it worth it? Whatever troops he can offer, if it means hurting her?
We've been working with Kier for centuries. She should be used to it by now. And yes, his troops are worth it. The Darkbringers are well-trained, powerful, and have been idle too long.
I considered. The last time we went to the Court of Nightmares, I played your whore. He winced at the word.
But I am now your High Lady, I went on, stroking a finger over the back of his hand.
He tracked the movement. My voice dropped lower. To get Kier to agree to aid us, any tips on what mask I should wear to the Hewn City?
It's for you to decide, he said, still watching my finger trace idle circles on his skin. You've seen how I am there, how we are. It's for you to decide how to play into that.
I suppose I'd better decide soon. Not just for this, but the meeting with the other High Lords in 2 weeks. Rhys slid a sidelong glance to me.
Every court is invited.
I doubt he'll come, given that he's Highburn's ally and knows we'd kill him. The river breeze stirred his blue-black hair.
The meeting will occur with a binding spell that forces all of us into ceasefire. If someone breaks it while the meeting occurs, the magic will demand a steep cost, probably their life. Tamlin wouldn't be stupid enough to attack, nor us him.
Why invite him at all?
Excluding him will only give him more ammunition against us. Believe me, I have little desire to see him, or Baron, who perhaps is higher on my kill list than Tamlin right now.
Tarquin will be there,
and we are pretty high on his kill list. Even with the blood rubies, he wouldn't be stupid enough to attack during the meeting.
Rhys sighed through his nose. How many allies can we count on? Beyond Kier and the Hewn City, I mean. I glanced down the river walkway. The diners and revelers were too busy enjoying themselves to even note our presence, even with Rhys's recognizable wings. Still, perhaps not the best place for this conversation.
I'm not sure,
Rhys admitted.
Helion and his day court, probably. Calias, maybe. Things have been strained with the winter court since Under the Mountain.
I assume Azriel is going to be finding out more.
He's already on the hunt.
I nodded. Amryn claimed she and Nesta needed help researching ways to repair the wall. I gestured to the city.
Point me toward the best library to find that sort of thing. Reese's brows lifted.
Right now? Your work ethic puts mine to shame.
I hissed.
Tomorrow, smart ass.
He chuckled, wings flaring and tucking in tight. Wings. Wings he'd allowed Lucian to see.
You trust Lucian?
Reese angled his head at the not-quite question.
I trust in the fact that we currently have possession of the one thing he wants above all else. And as long as that remains, he'll try to stay on our good side. But if that changes...
His talent was wasted in the Spring Court.
There was a reason he had that fox mask, you know.
His mouth tugged to the side.
If he got Elaine away, back to Spring, or wherever, do you believe deep down that he wouldn't sell what he knows? Either for gain or to ensure she stays safe?
You let him hear everything tonight, though.
None of it is information that would let Highburn wreck us. The King likely already knows that we'll go for Kier's alliance, that we'll try to find a way to stop him from bringing down the wall. He wasn't subtle with Dagdon and Branna searching. He'll expect us to try to band the High Lords together, which is why the meeting location will not be decided until later. Will I tell Lucian then? Bring him along?
I considered this question. Did I trust Lucian?
I don't know either,
I admitted, and sighed.
I don't like that Elaine is a pawn in this.
I know. It's never easy.
He'd dealt with such things for centuries.
I want to wait. See what Lucian does over the next 2 weeks. How he acts with us and Elaine. What Asriel thinks of him.
I frowned. He's not a bad person. He's not evil.
He certainly isn't.
I met his calm, steady stare. There is risk in trusting him without question.
Did he discuss what he feels regarding Tamlin?
No, I didn't want to push on that. He was remorseful about what happened with me, and Highburn and Elaine. Would he have felt that way without Elaine in the mix? I don't know. Maybe. I don't think he would have left, though.
Reese brushed the hair from my face.
It's all part of the game, Feyre, darling.
Who to trust, when to trust them, what information to barter.
Do you enjoy it?
Sometimes. Right now, I don't. Not when the risks are this high.
His fingers grazed my brow.
When I have so much to lose.
I laid my palm on his chest, right over those Illyrian tattoos beneath his clothes, right over his heart. Felt the sturdy beat echoing into my skin and bones. I forgot the city around us as he met my eyes, lips hovering over my skin, and murmured,
"We will keep planning for the future. War or no war, I will keep planning for our future."
My throat burned, and I nodded.
"We deserve to be happy,"
he said, his eyes sparkling enough to tell me that he recalled the words I'd given him on the townhouse roof after the attack.
"And I will fight with everything I have to ensure it."
"We will fight," I said hoarsely. "Not just you, not anymore." Too much. He had given too much already, and still seemed to think it was not enough. But Reese only peered over his broad shoulder to the cheerful restaurant behind us.
"That first night we all came here," he said, and I followed his gaze, watching the workers set the tables with loving precision. "When you told Savenda that you felt awake while eating her food."
He shook his head.
"It was the first time you had looked peaceful. Like you were indeed awake, alive again. I was so relieved, I thought I'd puke right onto the table."
I recalled the long, strange look he'd given me when I'd finally spoken,
then the long walk we'd taken home, when we'd heard that music he'd sent to my cell under the mountain. I pushed off the rail and tugged him toward the bridge that spanned the Sidra, the bridge to take us home. Let the debate over who'd given the most on this war rest for now. Walk with me, through the rainbow. The glittering, colorful jewel of the city, the beating heart that housed the artist's quarter, vibrant and thrumming at this hour of the night. I linked arms with him before saying, "You and this city helped wake me up, helped bring me back to life." His eyes flickered as I smiled up at him. "I will fight with everything I have too, Reese. Everything." He only kissed the top of my head, tugging me closer as we crossed the Sidra under the starry sky. Chapter 19. It was a good thing I'd insisted on meeting Cassian at 8, because even though I awoke at dawn, one look at Rhysand's sleeping face had me deciding to spend the morning slowly, sweetly, waking him up. I was still flushed by the time Rhys dropped me at the sparring ring atop the House of Wind, the space surrounded by a wall of red rock, the top open to the elements. He promised to meet me after lunch to show me the library for my researching, then gave me a roguish wink and kiss on the cheek before he shot back into the sky with a powerful flap of his wings. Leaning against the wall beside the weapons rack, Cassian only said, "I hope you didn't exert yourself too much already, because this is really going to hurt." I rolled my eyes, even as I tried to shut out the image of Rhysand laying me on my stomach, then kissing his way down my spine. Lower. Tried to shut out the feeling of his strong hands gripping my hips and lifting them up, up, until he lay beneath them and feasted on me. Until I was quietly begging him, and he rose behind me, and I had to bite my pillow to keep from waking the whole house with my moaning. Rhysand in the morning was... I didn't have words for what it was when he was unhurried and lazy and wicked, when his hair was still mussed with sleep, and his eyes got that glazed, purely male gleam in them. They'd still had that lazy, satisfied glint a moment ago, and his mockingly chaste kiss on my cheek had sent a red-hot line through me. Later. I'd torture him later. For now, I strode to where Cassian stood, rotating my shoulders. Two Illyrian males making me sweat in one morning. What's a female to do? Cassian barked a laugh.
"At least you showed up with some spirit."
I grinned, bracing my hands on my hips as I surveyed the weapons rack. "Which one?"
"None."
He jerked his chin toward the ring etched in white chalk behind us.
"It's been a while since we trained. We're spending today going over the basics."
The words were laced with enough tightness that I said, "It hasn't been that long."
"It's been a month and a half."
I studied him, the wings tucked in tight, the shoulder-length dark hair. "What's wrong?"
"Nothing."
He stalked past me to the ring. "Is it Nesta?"
"Not everything in my life is about your sister, you know."
I kept my mouth shut on that front. "Is it something with the Court of Nightmares' visit tomorrow?" Cassian shucked off his shirt, revealing rippling muscles covered in beautiful, intricate tattoos, Illyrian markings for luck and glory.
"It's nothing. Get into position."
I obeyed, even as I eyed him carefully. "You're... angry." He refused to speak until I started my circuit of warm-ups, various lunges, kicks, and stretches designed to loosen my muscles. And only when we began sparring, his hands wrapped against my onslaught of punching, did he say,
"You and Rhys hid the truth from us, and we went into Highburn blind about it."
"About what?"
"That you're High Lady."
I jabbed at his raised hands in a 1-2 combination, breathing hard.
What difference would it have made?
It would have changed everything. None of it would have gone down like that.
Perhaps that's why Rhys decided to keep it a secret.
Highburn was a disaster.
I halted my punching. You knew I was his mate when we went. I don't see how being High Lady alters anything.
It does.
I put my hands on my hips, ignoring his motion to continue. Why? Cassian dragged a hand through his hair.
Because, as his mate, you were still his to protect. Oh, don't get that look. He's yours to protect, too. I would have laid my life down for you as his mate and as your friend, but you were still his.
And as High Lady? Cassian loosed a rough breath.
As High Lady, you are mine. And Azriel's, and Moore's, and Amren's. You belong to all of us, and we belong to you. We would not have put you in so much danger.
Maybe that's why Rhys wanted to keep it a secret. It would have changed your focus.
This is between you and me. And trust me, Rhys and I had words about this.
I lifted a brow.
You're mad at me?
He shook his head, eyes shuddering.
Cassian.
He just held up his hands in a silent order to continue.
I sighed and began again.
It was only after I'd gotten through 15 repetitions and was panting heavily that Cassian said,
You didn't think you were essential. You saved our asses, yes, but you didn't think you were essential here.
1-2, 1-2, 1-2. I'm not. He opened his mouth, but I charged ahead, speaking around my gasps for breath.
You all have a duty. You're all vital. Yes, I have my own abilities, but you and Azriel were hurt. My sisters were... You know what happened to them. I did what I could to get us out. I'd rather it was me than any of you. I couldn't have lived with the alternative.
His upraised hands were unfaltering as I pummeled them.
Anything could have happened to you at the Spring Court.
I stopped again. If Rhys isn't grilling me with the overprotective bullshit, then I don't see why you...
Don't for one moment think that Rhys wasn't beside himself with worry.
Oh, he seems collected enough, Feyre, but I know him, and every moment you were gone, he was in a panic.
Yes, he knew, we knew, you could handle yourself, but it doesn't stop us from worrying.
I shook out my sore hands, then rubbed my already aching arms. You are mad at him, too.
If I hadn't been healing, I would have kicked his ass from one end of Valaris to the other.
I didn't reply.
We were all terrified for you.
I managed just fine.
Of course you did. We know you would, but...
Cassian crossed his arms.
Rhys pulled the same shit 50 years ago, when he went to that damned party Amarantha threw.
Oh.
Oh. I'll never forget it, you know,
he said, blowing out a breath.
The moment when he spoke to us all, mind to mind, when I realized what was happening... And that he'd saved us, trapped us here, and tied our hands, but...
He scratched at his temple.
It went quiet in my head, in a way it hadn't been before, not since.
Cassian squinted at the cloudless sky.
Even with utter hell unleashing here across our territory, I just went quiet.
He tapped the side of his head with a finger and frowned.
After Highburn, the healer kept me asleep while she worked on my wings. So when I woke up, 2 weeks later, that's when I heard. And when Moore told me what happened to you, it went quiet again.
I swallowed against the constriction of my throat. You found me when I needed you most, Cassian.
Pleased to be of service.
He gave me a grim smile.
You can rely on us, you know. Both of you.
He's inclined to do everything himself, to give everything of himself. He can't stand to let anyone else offer up anything.
That smile faded.
Neither can you.
And you can?
It's not easy, but yes. I'm general of his armies. Part of that includes knowing how to delegate. I've been with Rhys for over 500 years, and he still tries to do everything himself. Still thinks it's not enough.
I knew that too well. And the thought of Rhys in this war trying to take on all that faced us. Nausea churned in my gut.
He gives orders all the time. Yes, and he's good at knowing what we excel at. But when it comes down to it...
Cassian adjusted the wrappings on his hands.
If the High Lords and Kier don't step up, he'll still face Highburn. And we'll take the brunt of it so we don't have to.
An unshakable, queasy sort of tightness pushed in on me. Rhys would survive. He wouldn't dare sacrifice everything to make sure we... Rhys would. He had with Amarantha, and he'd do it again without hesitation. I shut it out. Shoved it down. Focused on my breathing. Something drew Cassian's attention behind me, and even as his body remained casual, a predatory gleam flickered in his eyes. I didn't need to turn around to know who was standing there.
"Care to join?"
Cassian purred. Nesta said, "It doesn't look like you're exercising anything other than your mouths." I looked over my shoulder. My sister was in a dress of pale blue that turned her skin golden, her hair swept up, her back a stiff column. I scrambled to say something, to apologize, but not in front of him. She wouldn't want this conversation in front of Cassian. Cassian extended a wrapped hand, his fingers curling in a come-hither motion.
"Scared?"
I wisely kept my mouth shut, as Nesta stepped from the open doorway into the blinding light of the courtyard.
"Why should I be scared of an oversized bat who likes to throw temper tantrums?"
I choked, and Cassian shot me a warning glare, daring me to laugh. But I felt for that bond in my mind, lowering my mental shields enough to say to Rhysand, wherever he was in the city, "Please come spare me from Cassian and Nesta's bickering." A heartbeat later, Rhys crooned,
"Regretting becoming High Lady?"
I savored that voice, that humor. But I shoved that simmering panic down again as I countered, "Is this part of my duties?" A sensual dark laugh.
"Why do you think I was so desperate for a partner? I've had almost 5 centuries to deal with this alone. It's only fair you have to endure it now."
Cassian was saying to Nesta,
"Seems like you're a little on edge, Nesta. And you left so abruptly last night. Any way I can help ease that tension?"
"Please," I begged Rhys.
"What will you give me?"
I wasn't sure if I could hiss down the bond between us, but from the chuckle that echoed into my mind a heartbeat later, I knew the feeling had been conveyed. "I'm in a meeting with the governors of the palaces. They might be a little pissy if I vanish." I tried not to sigh. Nesta picked at her nails. "Amryn is coming to instruct me in a few..." Shadow rippled across the courtyard, cutting her off. And it wasn't Rhysand who landed between us, but...
"I sent another pretty face for you to admire,"
Rhys said. "Not as beautiful as mine, of course. But a close second." As the shadows wreathing him cleared, Asriel sized up Nesta and Cassian, then threw a vaguely sympathetic look in my direction.
"I need to start our lesson early."
A piss-poor lie, but I said,
"Right. No problem at all."
Cassian glowered at me, then Asriel. We both ignored him as I strode to the Shadow Singer, unwrapping my hands as I went.
"Thank you," I said down the bond.
"You can make it up to me tonight." I tried not to blush at the image Rhys sent into my head, detailing precisely how I'd repay him, and slammed down my mental shields. On the other side of them, I could have sworn talon-tipped fingers trailed down the black adamant in a sensual, silent promise. I swallowed hard. Asriel's wings spread, dark reds and golds shining through in the bright sun, and he opened his arms to me. "The pine forest will be good. The one by the lake."
"Why?"
"Because water is better to fall into than hard rock,"
Cassian replied, crossing his arms.
My stomach clenched.
But I let Asriel scoop me up, his scent of night-chilled mist and cedar wrapping around me as he flapped his wings once, stirring the dirt of the courtyard. I caught Cassian's narrowed gaze and grinned widely.
"Good luck,"
I said. And Asriel, Cauldron bless him, shot into the cloudless sky. Neither of us missed Cassian's barked filthy curse, though we didn't deign to comment. Cassian was a general, the general of the Night Court. Surely Nesta wasn't anything he couldn't handle. I dropped Amryn off at the house on my way in, Asriel told me as we landed at the shore of a turquoise mountain lake flanked by pines and granite. I told her to get to the training ring immediately. A half smile. After a few minutes, that is. I snorted and stretched my arms.
Poor Cassian.
Asriel gave a huff of amusement.
Indeed.
I shifted on my feet, small gray rock along the shore skittering beneath my boots. So, Asriel's black hair seemed to gobble up the blinding sunlight.
"In order to fly," he said dryly, "you'll need wings."
"Right." My face heated. I rolled and cracked my wrists. "It's been a while since I summoned them."
His piercing stare didn't stray from my face, my posture. As immovable and steady as the granite this lake had been carved into, I might as well have been a flitting butterfly by comparison.
"Do you need me to turn around?"
He lifted a dark brow in emphasis. I cringed. "No. But it might take me a few tries."
"We started our lesson early. We've got plenty of time."
"I appreciate you making the effort to pretend that it wasn't because I was desperate to avoid Cassian and Nesta's early morning bickering."
"I'd never let my High Lady suffer through that," he said, completely stone-faced.
I chuckled, rubbing at a sore spot on my shoulder. "Are you ready to meet with Lucian this afternoon?" Asriel angled his head.
"Should I be preparing for it?"
"No, I just..." I shrugged. "When do you leave to gather information on the High Lords?"
"After I talk to him."
His eyes were shining, lit with amusement, as if he knew I was buying time. I blew out a breath.
"Right. Here we go."
Touching that part of me, the part Tamlin had given me, some vital piece of my heart recoiled, even as something sharp and vicious in my gut preened at what I'd taken, all that I'd taken. I shoved out the thoughts, focusing on those Illyrian wings. I'd summoned them that day in the steps from pure memory and fear, creating them now. I let my mind slip into my recollections of Rhys's wings, how they felt and moved and weighed.
"The frame needs to be a bit thicker,"
Asriel offered as a weight began to drag at my back.
"Strengthen the muscles leading to it."
I obeyed, my magic listening in turn. He provided more feedback, where to add and where to ease up, where to smooth and where to toughen. I was rasping for breath, sweat gliding down my spine by the time he said,
"Good."
He cleared his throat.
"I know you're not Illyrian, but amongst their kind, it is considered inappropriate to touch someone's wings without permission. especially females. Their kind, not his. It took me a moment to realize what he was asking.
Oh, go ahead.
I need to ascertain if they feel right.
Right.
I put my back to him, my muscles groaning as they worked to spread the wings.
Everything. From my neck to my shoulders, to my ribs, to my spine, to my ass, seemed to now control them, and was barking in protest at the weight and movement.
I'd only had them for a few seconds with Lucian in the steps. I hadn't realized how heavy they were, how complex the muscles. Asriel's hands, for all their scarring, were feather-light as he grasped and touched certain areas, patting and tapping others. I gritted my teeth, the sensation like having the arch of my foot tickled and poked. But he made quick work of it, and I rolled my shoulders again as he stepped around me to murmur, "It's amazing. They're the same as mine." I think the magic did most of the work. A shake of the head. "You're an artist. It was your attention to detail." I blushed a bit at the compliment and raised my hands on my hips.
"Well, do we jump into the skies?"
"First lesson. Don't let them drag on the ground." I blinked. My wings were indeed resting on the rocks.
"Why?"
"Illyrians think it's lazy. A sign of weakness. And from a practical standpoint, the ground is full of things that could hurt your wings. Splinters. Shards of rock. They can not only get stuck and lead to infection, but also impact the way the wing catches the wind. So keep them off the ground." Knife, sharp pain rippled down my back as I tried to lift them. I managed getting the left upright. The right just drooped, like a loose sail.
"You need to strengthen your back muscles. And your thighs. And your arms. And core."
"So, everything, then." Again, that dry, quiet smile.
"Why do you think Illyrians are so fit?"
"Why did no one warn me about this cocky side of yours?" Asriel's mouth twitched upward.
"Both wings up."
A quiet but unyielding demand. I winced, contorting my body this way and that, as I fought to get the right one to rise. No luck.
"Try spreading them, then tucking in, if you can't lift it up like that."
I obeyed, and hissed at the sharp pain along every muscle in my back as I flared the wings. Even the slightest breeze off the lake tickled and tugged, and I braced my feet apart on the rocky shore, seeking some semblance of balance.
"Now fold inward."
I did, snapping them shut, the movement so fast that I toppled forward. Asriel caught me before I could eat stone, gripping me tightly under the shoulder and hauling me up.
"Building your core muscles will also help with the balance."
"So, back to Cassian, then." A nod.
"Tomorrow. Today, we focus on lifting and folding, spreading and lifting."
Asriel's wings gleamed with red and gold as the sun gilded them.
"Like this."
He demonstrated, flaring his wings wide, tucking them in, flaring, angling, tucking them in, over and over. Sighing, I followed his movements, my back throbbing and aching. Perhaps flying lessons were a waste of time. Chapter 20. "I've never been to a library before," I admitted to Rhys after lunch, as we strode down level after level beneath the House of Wind, my words echoing off the carved red stone. I winced with every step, rubbing at my back. Asriel had given me a tonic that would help with the soreness, but I knew that by tonight, I'd be whimpering. If hours of researching any way to patch up those holes in the wall didn't make me start first. "I mean," I clarified, "not counting the private libraries here and the Spring Court, and my family had one as well, but
Not a real one.
Rhys glanced sidelong at me.
I've heard that the humans have free libraries on the continent, open to anyone.
I wasn't sure if it was a question or not, but I nodded. In one of the territories, they allow anyone in, regardless of their station or bloodline. I considered his words. Were there libraries before the war? Of course there had been, but what I meant...
Yes, great libraries, full of cranky scholars who could find you tomes dating back thousands of years. But humans weren't allowed inside, unless you were someone's slave on an errand, and even then you were closely watched.
Why?
Because the books were full of magic, and things they wanted to keep humans from knowing.
Rhys slid his hands into his pockets, leading me down a corridor lit only by bowls of phalite, appraised in the hands of beautiful female statues, their forms high fae and fairy alike.
The scholars and librarians refused to keep slaves of their own, some for personal reasons, but mainly because they didn't want them accessing the books and archives.
Rhys gestured down another curving stairwell. We must have been far beneath the mountain, the air dry and cool and heavy, as if it had been trapped inside for ages. What happened to the libraries once the wall was built? Rhys tucked in his wings as the stairs became tighter, the ceiling dropping.
Most scholars had enough time to evacuate, and were able to winnow the books out. But if they didn't have the time, or the brute power...
A muscle ticked in his jaw.
They burned the libraries, rather than let the humans access their precious information.
A chill snaked down my spine. They'd rather have lost that information forever? He nodded, the dim light gilding his blue-black hair.
Prejudices aside, the fear was that the humans would find dangerous spells and use them on us.
But they don't have magic. Humans don't have magic.
Some do. Usually the ones who can claim distant fae ancestry. But some of those spells don't require magic from the wielder, only the right words, or use of ingredients.
His words snagged on something in my mind. Obviously they did, but humans and fae once interbred, what happened to the offspring? If you were half fae, half human, where did you go once the wall went up? Rhys stepped into a hall at the foot of the stairs, revealing a wide passageway of carved red stone and a sealed set of obsidian doors, veins of silver running throughout. Beautiful. Terrifying. Like some great beast was kept behind them.
It did not go well for the half-breeds, he said after a moment. Many were offspring of unwanted unions. Most usually chose to stay with their human mothers, their human families. But once the wall went up, amongst humans they were a reminder of what had been done, of the enemies lurking above the wall. At best, they were outcasts and pariahs, their children if they bore the physical traits as well. At worst, humans were angry in those initial years. And that first generation afterward. They wanted someone to pay for the slavery, for the crimes against them, even if the half-breed had done nothing wrong. It did not end well.
He approached the doors, which opened on a phantom wind, as if the mountain itself lived to serve him. And the ones above the wall?
They were deemed even lower than lesser fairies. Either they were unwanted everywhere they went, or many found work on the streets, selling themselves.
Here in Valaris? My words were a bare brush of air.
My father was still High Lord then,
Rhys said, his back stiffening.
We had not allowed any humans, slave or free, into our territory in centuries. He didn't allow them in, either to whore or to find sanctuary.
And once you were High Lord? Rhys halted before the gloom that spread beyond us. By then it was too late for most of them. It's hard to offer refuge to someone without being able to explain where we were offering them a safe place. To get the word out about it while maintaining our illusion of ruthless cruelty. The starlight guttered in his eyes. Over the years, we encountered a few. Some were able to make it here. Some were beyond our help. Something moved in the darkness beyond the doors, but I kept my focus on his face, on his tensed shoulders. If the wall comes down, Will. I couldn't finish the words. Rhys slid his fingers through mine, interlacing our hands. Yes. If there are those, human or fairy, who need a safe place, this city will be open to them. Valaris has been closed off for so long. Too long, perhaps. Adding new people from different places, different histories and cultures. I don't see how that could be a bad thing. The transition might be more complex than we anticipate, but yes. The gates to this city will be open for those who need its protection. To any who can make it here. I squeezed his hand, savoring the hard-earned calluses on it. No, I would not let him bear the burden of this war, its cost, alone. Rhys glanced to the open doors, to the hooded and cloaked figure patiently waiting in the shadows beyond them. Every aching sinew and bone locked up as I took in the pale robes, the hood crowned with a limpid blue stone, the panel that could be lowered over the eyes. Priestess. This is Clotho, Rhys said calmly, releasing my hand to guide me toward the awaiting female. The weight of his hand on my lower back told me enough about how much he realized the sight of her would jar me. She's one of the dozen of priestesses who work here. Clotho lowered her head in a bow, but said nothing. I didn't know that the priestesses left their temples. A library is a temple of sorts, Rhys said with a wry smile. But the priestess is here. As we entered the library proper, golden lights flickered to life, as if Clotho had been in utter darkness until we'd entered. They are special. Unique. She angled her head in what might have been amusement. Her face remained in shadow, her slim body concealed in those pale, heavy robes. Silence, and yet life danced around her. Rhys smiled warmly at the priestess. Did you find the texts? And it was only when she bobbed her head in a sort of so-so motion that I realized either she could not or would not speak. Clotho gestured to her left, into the library itself. And I dragged my eyes away from the mute priestess long enough to take in the library. Not a cavernous room in a manor. Not even close. This was... It was as if the base of the mountain had been hollowed out by some massive digging beast, leaving a pit descending into the dark heart of the world. Around that gaping hole, carved into the mountain itself, spiraled level after level of shelves and books and reading areas leading into the inky black. From what I could see of the various levels as I drifted toward the carved stone railing overlooking the drop, the stacks shot far into the mountain itself, like the spokes of a mighty wheel. And through it all, fluttering like moth's wings, the rustle of paper and parchment. Silent, and yet alive. Awake and humming and restless, some many-limbed beast at constant work. I peered upward, finding more levels rising toward the house above. And lurking far below, darkness. What's at the bottom of the pit? I asked, as Rhys came up beside me, his shoulder brushing mine.
I once dared Cassian to fly down and see.
Rhys braced his hands on the railing, gazing down into the gloom.
And? And he came back up, faster than I have ever seen him fly, white as death. He never told me what he saw. The first few weeks, I thought it was a joke, just to pique my curiosity. But when I finally decided to see for myself a month later, he threatened to tie me to a chair. He said some things were better left unseen and undisturbed. It's been 200 years, and he still won't tell me what he saw. If you even mention it, he goes pale and shaky and won't talk for a few hours.
My blood chilled. Is it some sort of monster?
I have no idea.
Rhys jerked his chin toward Clotho, the priestess patiently waiting a few steps behind us, her face still in shadow.
They don't speak or write of it, so if they know, they certainly won't tell me. So if it doesn't bother us, then I won't bother it. That is, if it's even an it. Cassian never said if he saw anything living down there. Perhaps it's something else entirely.
Considering the things I'd already witnessed, I didn't want to think about what lay at the bottom of that library, or what could make Cassian, who had seen more dreadful and deadly parts of the world than I could ever imagine, so terrified. Robes rustling, Clotho aimed for the sloping walkway into the library, and we fell into step behind her. The floors were red stone like the rest of the place, but smooth and polished. I wondered if any of the priestesses had ever gone sledding down the spiraling path.
Not that I know of,
Rhys said into my mind.
But Mor and I once tried when we were children. My mother caught us on our third level down, and we were sent to bed without supper.
I clamped down on my smile. Was it such a crime?
It was when we'd oiled up the floor, and the scholars were falling on their faces.
I coughed to cover my laugh, lowering my head, even with Clotho a few steps ahead. We passed stacks of books and parchment, the shelves either built into the stone itself or made of dark solid wood. Hallways lined with both vanished into the mountain itself, and every few minutes a little reading area popped up, full of tidy tables, low-burning glass lamps, and deep cushioned chairs and couches. Ancient woven rugs adorned the floors beneath them, usually set before fireplaces that had been carved into the rock and kept well away from any shelves, their grates fine-meshed enough to retain any wandering embers. Cozy, despite the size of the space. Warm, despite the unknown terror lurking below.
If the others piss me off too much, I like to come down here for some peace and quiet.
I smiled slightly at Rhys, who kept looking ahead as we spoke mind to mind. Don't they know by now they can find you down here?
Of course. But I never go to the same spot twice in a row, so it usually takes them so long to find me that they don't bother. Plus, they know that if I'm here, it's because I want to be alone.
Poor baby High Lord, I crooned, having to run away to find solitude perfect for brooding. Rhys pinched my behind, and I clamped down on my lip to keep from yelping. I could have sworn Clotho's shoulders shook with laughter. But before I could bite off Rhys's head for the rippling pain my aching muscles felt in the wake of the sudden movement, Clotho led us into a reading area about 3 levels down, the massive work table laden with fat, ancient books bound in various dark leathers. A neat stack of paper was set to one side, along with an assortment of pens, and the reading lamps were at full glow, merry and sparkling in the gloom. A silver tea service gleamed on a low-lying table between the 2 leather couches before the grumbling fireplace, steam curling from the arched spout of the kettle. Biscuits and little sandwiches filled the platter beside it, along with a fat pile of napkins that subtly hinted we use them before touching the books.
Thank you,
Rhys told the priestess, who only pulled a book off the pile she'd undoubtedly gathered and opened it to a marked page. The ancient velvet ribbon was the color of old blood, but it was her hand that struck me as it met the golden light of the lamps. Her fingers were crooked, bent and twisted at such angles I would have thought her born with them were it not for the scarring. For a heartbeat, I was in a spring wood. For a heartbeat, I heard the crunch of stone on flesh and bone as I made another priestess smash her hand over and over. Rhys put a hand on my lower back. The effort it must have taken Clotho to move everything into place with those gnarled hands. But she looked toward another book, or at least her head turned that way, and it slid over to her. Magic.
Right.
She gestured with a finger that was bent in two different directions to the page she'd selected, then to the book.
I'll look,
Rhys said, then inclined his head.
We'll give a shout if we need anything.
Clotho bowed her head again and began striding away, careful and silent. Thank you, I said to her. The priestess paused, looking back, and bowed her head, hood swaying. Within seconds, she was gone. I stared after her, even as Rhys slid into one of the two chairs before the piles of books.
A long time ago, Clotho was hurt very badly by a group of males,
Rhys said quietly.
I didn't need details to know what that had entailed. The edge in Rhys's voice implied enough. They cut out her tongue so she couldn't tell anyone who had hurt her, and smashed her hands so she couldn't write it.
Every word was more clipped than the last, and darkness snarled through the small space. My stomach turned. Why not kill her?
Because it was more entertaining for them that way. That is, until Moore found her and brought her to me.
When he undoubtedly looked into her mind and seen their faces.
I let Moore hunt them.
His wings tucked in tightly.
And when she finished, she stayed down here for a month, helping Clotho heal as best as could be expected, but also wiping away the stain of them.
Moore's trauma had been different, but I understood why she'd done it, wanted to be here. I wondered if it had granted her any measure of closure. Cassian and Azriel were healed completely after Highburn. Nothing could be done for Clotho?
The males were healing her as they hurt her, making the injuries permanent. When Moore found her, the damage had been set. They hadn't finished her hands, so we were able to salvage them, give her some use, but to heal her, the wounds would have needed to be ripped open again. I offered to take the pain away while it was done, but she couldn't endure it. What having the wounds open again would trigger in her mind, her heart. She has lived down here since then, with others like her. Her magic helps with her mobility.
I knew we should begin working, but I asked, are all the priestesses in the library like her?
Yes.
The word held centuries of rage and pain.
I made this library into a refuge for them. Some come to heal, work as acolytes, and then leave. Some take the oaths to the Cauldron and Mother to become priestesses and remain here forever. But it belongs to them, whether they stay a week or a lifetime. Outsiders are allowed to use the library for research, but only if the priestesses approve, and only if they take binding oaths to do no harm while they visit. This library belongs to them.
Who was here before them?
A few cranky old scholars, who cursed me soundly when I relocated them to other libraries in the city. They still get access, but when and where is always approved by the priestesses.
Choice. It had always been about choice with him, and for others as well.
long before he'd ever learned the hard way about it. The question must have been in my eyes because Rhys added, "I came here a great deal in those weeks after Under the Mountain." My throat tightened as I leaned in to brush a kiss to his cheek. "Thank you for sharing this place with me."
"It belongs to you too now."
And I knew he meant not just in terms of us being mates, but in the ways that belonged to other females here, who had endured and survived. I gave him a half smile. "I suppose it's a miracle that I can even stand to be underground." But his features remained solemn, contemplative.
"It is."
He added softly,
"I'm very proud of you."
My eyes burned, and I blinked as I faced the books. "And I suppose," I said with an effort of lightness, "that it's a miracle I can actually read these things." Reese's answering smile was lovely, and just a bit wicked.
"I believe my little lessons helped."
"Yes, Rhys is the greatest lover a female can hope for," is undoubtedly how I learned to read.
"I was only trying to tell you what you now know."
My blood heated a bit. Was all I said, pulling a book toward me.
"I'll take that as a challenge."
His hand slid down my thigh and cupped my knee, his thumb brushing along its side. Even through my leathers, the heat of him seeped to my very bones.
"Maybe I'll haul you between the stacks and see how quiet you can be."
I slipped through the pages, not seeing any of the text. His hand began a lethal, taunting exploration up my thigh, his fingers grazing along the sensitive inside. Higher, higher. He leaned in to drag a book toward himself, but whispered in my ear,
"Or maybe I'll spread you out on this desk and lick you until you scream loud enough to wake whatever is at the bottom of the library."
I whipped my head toward him. His eyes were glazed, almost sleepy. "I was fully committed to that plan," I said, even as his hand stopped very close to the apex of my thighs. "Until you brought in that thing down below." A feline smile. He held my stare as his tongue brushed his bottom lip. My breasts tightened beneath my shirt, and his gaze dropped, watching.
"I would have thought," he mused, "that our bout this morning would be enough to tide you over until tonight."
His hand slid between my legs, brazenly cupping me, his thumb pushing down on an aching spot. A low groan slipped from me, and my cheeks heated in its wake.
"Apparently, I didn't do a good enough job sating you, if you're so easily riled after a few hours."
"Prick," I breathed. But the word was ragged. His thumb pressed down harder, circling roughly. Rhys leaned in again, kissing my neck, that place right under my ear, and set against my skin.
"Let's see what names you call me when my head is between your legs, Feyre darling."
And then he was gone. He'd winnowed away, half the books with him. I started, my body foreign and cold, dizzy and disoriented. "Where the hell are you?" I scanned around me and found nothing but shadow and merry flame and books.
"Two levels below."
"And why are you two levels below?" I shoved out of my chair, back aching in protest, as I stormed for the walkway and rail beyond, then peered down into the gloom. Sure enough, in a reading area two levels below, I could spy his dark hair and wings, could spy him leaning back in his chair before an identical desk, an ankle crossed over a knee, smirking up at me.
"Because I can't work with you distracting me."
I scowled at him.
I'm distracting you?
If you're sitting next to me, the last thing